next here, S and M, S, S period, M period, Michael. I'm so sorry, I'm going to butcher this name. Chiavarelli versus Chichester School District. Council, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Gabrielle Serini, and I represent the appellant Chichester School District, which is a Pennsylvania public school district which services approximately 3,000 students, 750 of which have special needs. SM is one.
Can you start by telling us, I didn't see a reply brief and maybe I missed it. Is there a reply brief in the case?
There is not, Your Honor.
And can you, are you conceding the arguments that are made by the other side?
No, sir, but we feel that we anticipated and addressed them in our brief.
Uh-huh. Well, why don't you then deal with Judge Brody's comment that, look, there's a local agency responsibility agreement here, and that puts Chichester on the hook. And she doesn't use these words, but it seems to kind of be implicit in what she's saying, that that's the end of the matter. They accepted the responsibility. They are contractually obligated to provide a FAPE. We're done. You want to respond to that?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Your Honor. The agreement about which you're referring, we've been calling a 1306 agreement. It's an allocation of responsibilities of a host school district and a school district of residence under Section 1306 of the Pennsylvania Public School Code of 1949. There were two that involved my client. The one that is at issue during the course of the administrative hearing, which gave rise to this appeal, was purportedly between Chichester School District and the Central Bucks School District.
Does that matter?
It does, Your Honor, because we have learned that the Pennsylvania Department of Education did not approve that agreement. And under 1306D, it must be approved by the Department of Education.
When you say we have learned that, is that in the record?
No, and neither is the 1306 agreement,
okay,
Your Honor.
Well, if it's not in the record, then it's not in front of us. But we've got to deal with what's in the record before us, Ms. Serini. And what's in the record before us is a district court decision that says the hearing officer never even mentioned this contract. It's a contractual obligation. It's in place. There's nothing to indicate that Chichester said, wait, it wasn't approved. They didn't say anything about it. So the record as it stands before us is your client's contractually obligated. So speak to that. Why isn't that, if we take that as the record and as the fact, why isn't that game up?
Because, Your Honor, the problem is there is no record on that. There is no administrative fact-finding. There is no administrative weighing in on the validity of that agreement. The district court undertook to receive it as evidence as part of the...
Which the district court's entitled to do.
As part of the preliminary injunction hearing, which was not actually a hearing. It was a presentation of a declaration by the plaintiff and argument on both sides. We don't believe, regardless of the 1306 agreement, that any school district has a responsibility to remove a student from a medical placement in a residential treatment facility. And by the way, the student
That's
is still...
That's not what the district court ordered. The district court didn't order the student's removal. The district court ordered the school district to provide a contingent IEP, did it not?
Well, that is what was pled in the complaint. Please allow me to say this because this is very important. This matter was before an administrative hearing officer and before the district court based on a request for relief that was very specific, a contingent IEP to take effect when the student is discharged from an RTF, which has never happened.
Right.
4 years.
SM still in Elwyn?
Pardon me?
Is SM still in Elwyn?
Yes, in the RTF, in the residential treatment
facility. What influence does this, does, if any, does Chichester have in securing his removal from Elwyn to a residential education placement?
The school district has done that under the preliminary injunction order. It has offered a residential educational placement. It's also at Elwyn, but it's not the same as the RTF. And we did that a year and a half ago after searching 15 to 20 schools. At this moment, that residential educational placement is the only one that has a spot and will accept this student. And yet the district has not been relieved from the preliminary injunction. There's no scheduling order. The case hasn't moved forward in 2.5 years.
What has to occur for SM to be taken out of the RTF?
His parent has to agree. And she has not agreed. She asked for a residential educational placement, but she doesn't want the one that the school district has offered under the preliminary injunction, which is the only one available.
Well, Judge Brody said, or perhaps it was the hearing officer, I can't recall which, seemed to indicate that Chichester was suggesting a placement without any consultation with the parent. Is that accurate?
It is not accurate. In fact, there was a list generated by both parties of all of the placements where referrals would be made. Elwyn was one of the ones that was agreed upon.
Is one of these placements out of state?
Not at the moment. I mean, there have been referrals to out-of-state placements. There was a placement called Shorehaven in Maryland, which the parent requested. The district didn't believe it was appropriate.
Why?
Because it wasn't appropriate to meet his behavioral needs, and Shorehaven confirmed that. In fact, they did not accept him, and the district was correct. We've offered a Pennsylvania placement. We have satisfied the terms of the preliminary injunction. We've made argument, and we accept for purposes of the argument today that we're under a preliminary injunction, and our request is that it be dissolved. But we don't think there was subject matter jurisdiction even to make it because the case was never ripe, which is what the hearing officer found.
Your argument on the ripeness, as I understand it, is that it's the school district's obligation to provide the IEP if and when the student is released from the hospital or the treatment facility. Because if the student's never released, there's no reason to do an IEP. Is that the crux of your argument?
He has an IEP, Your Honor. The IEP is for a day placement. He's had an IEP all along from Chichester School District. There's no reason to do a residential IEP. The whole notion
All right, but the hearing officer, who ruled in your favor for other reasons, concluded that the day placement wasn't sufficient, right? I thought the hearing officer's ruling was that there's nothing imminent here, and because there's nothing imminent, you prevail. Wasn't that the hearing officer's?
He certainly found that because there was no imminency of discharge, that my client prevailed.
Right. Okay. And I want to ask you about that because I don't see an imminency requirement in the IDEA. But set that aside for a moment. In addition to finding no imminence, the hearing officer, correct me if I'm wrong, said that if there is an obligation here to do something, then the residential placement's required. A day placement's insufficient. Isn't that also sort of an alternative holding of the hearing officer?
We don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, we believe that the hearing officer's decision was very well-intentioned.
No, I'm not asking you what you believe or what the intentions were. I'm asking what it was. And if I'm mistaken, I just stated what I thought it was. And if I'm mistaken about that, please point to me where the source of my error.
In the hearing officer decision, and this is before he gets to the discussion about the student's medical and educational needs. And please let me say that to the extent that he made factual findings about the medical needs, he could not have, because our subpoena for medical records was denied. So any determination that there was inextricability between medical and educational needs could not be proper. But in his decision, he made explicit that he was accepting, purely for purposes of analysis, because he was doing a ripeness analysis, that the premise offered by the parent that the student's behavioral and educational needs are inextricably intertwined and not as a finding of fact. And he went on to say that he makes assumptions. These are his words. I'm quoting from the decision. I make assumptions based on the parent's averments. I assume that the student's medical and educational needs are inextricably intertwined. And I assume that the student's upcoming RTF placement is currently a medical necessity. These decisions can't be based on assumptions, but that is the language.
You just gave a bunch of arguments as to why he was wrong, not why I mischaracterized what he did.
He didn't make findings of fact. He made assumptions, and his decision can't.
How do you account, Ms. Serini, for the much, much stronger language? I mean, we can grant you that he said things about assumptions at one point, but then he also said things like the record absolutely shows that this student cannot progress without a residential placement. I mean, it was the district court quoted it at some length, I'm not sure how you can characterize this as just assumptions. He said the record more than preponderantly establishes that the student cannot currently derive a benefit from education without the intensive behavioral support provided by residential placements. All arguments to the contrary ignore the entirety of the student's educational history, close quote. So that, you know, for all the world, doesn't that look like a finding of fact about historically what the student's needs were and what the current state of that student's educational needs are?
It might, Your Honor, except that he said that it wasn't a finding of fact. He said that it was an assumption. Well, that was his language.
I guess we'll read the language ourselves.
Let's go back
to the injunction for a minute, because it seems like the problem here is that the last line of the injunction says that the placement should be the one the parties mutually select. And the problem here is, I understand your position is, we're trying. We're making these options, and it's you're getting the no button every time.
Correct.
In response to the no button, have there been counter suggestions? We want the child to go to this place. I understand from the record that apparently the only place he was progressing, according to the record, was when he was at Melmark. Is that true?
No, Your Honor, he was discharged from Melmark. I mean, he progressed to the extent that Melmark discharged him in the summer of 2020. But he is progressing according to where he is now, and he's not even in a residential
education. Doesn't the appendix at 37 to 41 indicate for the 18 months, January 2019 to October 2020, that he was at Melmark, that he was making progress?
He made progress, Your Honor, to the extent that he could be discharged. We're not disputing that. Right. The whole notion.
So they said they want him to go back to Melmark, or what options are you getting in response to the options you've presented?
Part of the issue is there has been no process in the district court to determine the student's current needs, which have changed drastically. He goes home every weekend with the other parent who's not a party to this action, something he wasn't able to do before. He doesn't live in the RTF anymore because he goes home on weekends with both parents. So he doesn't live there if he goes home. And that's because he's made progress.
When you say there's no process in the district court, what is preventing you from sitting down, not you personally, the school district, sitting down with SM's parent or parents and exploring these options? Is there anything stopping that?
Your Honor, nothing is stopping it and nothing has stopped it. But this case has been
happening.
Yes, it's been going on for 4 years, Your Honor. It's a good faith disagreement, even to the extent of whether it continues.
Disagreement about the money? Because in your argument to us and your argument to the district court, it looks like it's about the money. the statement that we can't afford, Chichester can't afford this. If we were to do this for SM, we could not provide a FAPE for other children in need in the school district. Indeed, if we were to do this for SM, it would be, quote, the death knell of public education, unquote. That's a pretty extravagant assertion. So are we to not believe that the Chichester School District's real concern here is the money? That's what's going on.
Your Honor, public interest is one of the considerations for a preliminary injunction, and so that did come out in the argument. And I would be being dishonest with this court if I didn't say that the residential placement that's being requested will be approximately 1/12 of the entire special education budget for all of the students in the district. But it's not about the cost. The district has taken the position from day one that this child doesn't require to live in a school to make progress. And the district's been right.
Your argument depends on our believing that the hearing officer's statement that the record shows conclusively that this child needs a residential placement is a mere assumption, right? Because if we do what the district court did and say that's a finding of fact, then your argument collapses entirely, doesn't it?
May I respond, Your Honor?
Yeah, thanks. I wish you would, because I haven't. I've been trying to listen carefully, and it feels like you keep going back to the argument that he doesn't need it, and he doesn't need it now, and he's not really in the RTF residentially now, those sorts of things. But on the record we've got in front of us, if we accept what the district court accepted, which is that there was an alternative finding of fact that this student needs a residential placement, if we were to accept that, where do you go? Isn't your argument done at that point?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the argument that we're here for today is a request to please dissolve a preliminary injunction which has been satisfied, which was satisfied a year and a half ago, and which has caused the school district to have to continue to search for schools to the parents' liking. That's not the standard under the IDEA.
I thought your argument was not, we're here asking you to dissolve. I thought your argument was twofold. One, that the district court was wrong because there wasn't a fact finding to rely on. And two, that the district court acted in error because it in effect created a permanent injunction instead of a preliminary injunction. I did not see an argument number three, and I didn't see a reply brief even that would make an argument number three, which is, okay, we were wrong, we got it, but you know what, it's over now, dissolve it because the world has moved on. I don't see that anywhere in your briefing. Can you point me to anywhere in your briefing where you've said that?
May I respond to that, even though I'm beyond my time?
And please don't point me to the argument that says it's really a permanent injunction, it's not a preliminary injunction, because I read that.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually...
I think it's implicit in there.
I think it's throughout the brief, Your Honor, that we're asking for it to be dissolved. Dissolve them, and I'm on page 32 of our brief, dissolve the March 24th, 22 injunction order of the court.
Of course we understand that you want the injunction lifted, but I didn't see the argument that it should be lifted because everything's moved on and he's not really in need of this anymore. The world has changed in the time.
That would be a mootness argument.
Yeah.
Cases become moot all the time on appeal, but you didn't make that argument.
Well, that's because it was a year ago when we filed the brief and the circumstances.
But you could have sent us a letter a week ago under 28J saying, newsflash, the case is moot. He's going home on the weekends. He's doing great. He doesn't, you know. Change circumstances.
We believe that we had to present that to the district court first. 2 weeks ago, on very spur of the moment circumstances, the district court finally did have process on the facts. We presented witnesses from Elwin, witnesses from Melmark attended, but the court hasn't ruled on it.
All right.
Go ahead.
He's no longer in the RTF, is that correct?
No, he continues in. He's still in the RTF. He's remained in the RTF that the parents continue to say is so just terrible for him.
And the reason one is in the RTF is because of medical necessity?
The reason that he was put into the RTF was a medical reason, medical necessity.
If the medical necessity were to disappear, he could leave the RTF.
Yes, he could. And his his educational and medical needs could not be inextricably intertwined, which means no residential educational placement.
But you, what's troubling to me about this case is there's a lot happening in the district court at the same time there's a lot happening here, or some things happening here. Is it your view that we should just stay this case to let things continue to happen in the district court, or what? Is there a possibility of resolution through that mechanism?
We don't have a scheduling order, Your Honor. There doesn't seem to be an end in sight in the district court. The record, the administrative record in this matter, closed over 3 years ago. Any fact findings that you might find exist in that hearing officer decision are stale. The IDEA requires...
Isn't it satisfactory to your client, though, if we were to remand this case for a trial on the merits, you could litigate whether a day placement IEP is sufficient? That would be your argument, and I assume the other side's argument would be no, only a residential IEP is sufficient. That issue should be joined and litigated as soon as possible in the district court, shouldn't it?
Exhaustion under Batchelor versus Rose Tree Media says, yes, it should be remanded, but not to the district court, to an administrative special education hearing officer who is the individual who's supposed to make these decisions now. We're 3 years right. on a cold record. The student's needs have changed.
You can make that motion in the district court. The question right now, and you're just said the district court is doing things. But I think we understand. I think we understand where we are on the record right now, Ms. Serini. Now,
thank you.
You did not reserve any time for rebuttal, but... you know, if you really need it and want it, I'll give you a minute or two after we hear from Ms. McKinley.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Lauren McKinley and I represent SM and his mother. I almost don't know where to start. The idea that there's been no process in the district court, I take it that you guys have read the record because you mention the fact there I think we're up to 155 docket entries.
We guys have
the district. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, we've read it. We're with you. We have read the record and we've read the brief. So would you go first? Would you go straight to the argument that the school district has offered a residential educational placement?
Okay. Well,
and it has been refused. That they have tried in good faith to communicate with your client or clients, and they're not having any success.
Well, that's just totally disingenuous, Your Honor. First of all, there has been a huge process in the district court. There have been mediations. The judge hired her own outside mediator to try to resolve this case. The Third Circuit mediation went on for months and months. There have been a number of placements that came up. There was a placement at Shorehaven. Twice Shorehaven accepted SM. His parents wanted him to go there. It's in Maryland, close to home. The district's position was, well, no, it's an out-of-state school. Well, they applied to lots of places out-of-state. That is not an issue. The second time...
When you say that's not an issue, what do you mean?
Well, because it doesn't have to be in-state for it to be an appropriate fate.
Is that still an option?
Well, it's not right now. What happened was, so the first time it went away because they just refused to say yes. Then they applied to Elwyn, which the whole point of the preliminary injunction was to get him out of Elwyn. The parent and my partner went to look at the placement at Elwyn. It's the same place that he's been in where he's made no progress. There's been no progress at Elwyn. So that is the only one that she's ever said, I'm not leaving him at Elwyn. So then there was another Shorehaven placement. The judge had another hearing. We filed an emergency motion to enforce the injunction. Shorehaven was asked to basically appear in court, and at that point they withdrew, and they said, well, we can't meet his needs. Then there's another placement at Shrub Oak, which is in the northeast somewhere. I can't remember exactly where. We had another hearing. The judge actually issued a placement order, and then she called us in and said, well, we're going to have a different process. So she had already appointed a placement consultant to do basically a nationwide search to find a placement for this kid. Then she appointed a psychologist, a very well-known psychologist in Philadelphia, Dr. Mary Lazar. She wrote a 35-page report.
Can I just back up for a minute? In order for MS to go into a residential education placement, he has to first leave the RTF, correct?
Right.
And in order to leave the RTF, he has to overcome the medical necessity.
No, that's not correct. And that has been the argument all along. It's just flat out wrong. The medical necessity piece for a kid like SM, you know, it includes things like physical aggression, things like toilet training, things like, you know, safety, things like that. Those are all things that would be in his IEP. In fact, the IEP that the district has offered for Elwin includes all of those things. Those are all educational needs for the student.
What's it take for him to get out of the RTF?
It takes a residential placement to be in. He needs some place to go. That's the only reason he's in the RTF. The RTFs have been trying to discharge him for 3 years. Okay. But there's no place to put him because he cannot go.
The district says we've offered 15 placements, and they've rejected all of them.
That's wrong.
Except for Elwin.
That's wrong. Okay, which ones
have you said yes?
So Shrub Oak said, Shorehaven said yes twice. Parents said yes, please. Then Shrub Oak said yes. The district said, well, let's have another, or district court said, well, let's have another process. We'll get another consultant, blah, blah, blah. Well, then Melmark offers him a placement.
Hold on a second, Ms. McKinley. You're telling us about things that that you wanted to have, and they evidently said no to. I think the question to you now is, there's some representation that they offered things other than Elwin that you said no to.
That's absolutely wrong. The only place they've ever offered to put him in a residential faith is at Elwin. And by the very terms of the injunction, the court specifically said, we need a placement for this child to get him out of the place that he's already in. And
who says that Elwin's not acceptable?
Well, the parents that says
besides
it's not acceptable.
The
record is clear that he's not making progress at Elwin.
Besides the parents, does anyone say the Elwin residential placement would be unacceptable?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Besides the parents, do any psychologists I don't know who all's involved in this. Does anyone else say that staying at Elwin would be unacceptable?
I think everyone recognizes that he hasn't made progress at Elwin.
Does anyone say he should not stay at Elwin? Besides the parents?
Right, yes. I mean, the consultant that the judge hired the first time, Elwin itself.
Where do you want him to go?
Melmark.
Melmark
offered him a placement.
All right, how much,
this has all happened in the last 2 weeks.
Who's paying for Elwin?
Well, right now he's there on an RTF placement, so the state is paying. The state mental health system is paying.
All right. So, but if he were to go, I know you don't want him to go to the other side of Elwin.
Right.
But if he were to go to the other side of Elwin, is that cheaper than Melmark? Is that why the school district wants him to go to the other side of Elwin?
Well, we think this has always been about money. Always.
It's not responsive, respectfully, to my question.
Okay.
Is the other side of Elwin cheaper than Melmark?
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know, but we have. It would be the school district's responsibility, though.
Assuming that Elwin is cheaper than Melmark, this whole case comes down to the fact that the school district wants to put him in a cheaper facility than Melmark. That's where we are.
Well, we are right there because Melmark, which was not clear at all from what Mr. Reed said, Melmark offered him a residential fate at the end, I believe it was the end of May or beginning of June. We had another process, a two-day hearing.
End of May and June. You're talking about this year.
Right. So a two-day hearing, August 20th and 21st.
This is only going to work if this is a stylized conversation.
Right.
So it's not ordinary. So when one of us starts talking, it's important for us to stop.
I'm sorry.
Because otherwise the record becomes muddled and we can't. And when we go back and try to listen to it, we're talking over each other. So what I hear you saying is there is another placement on the table right now, which they are refusing to accept. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying.
Okay. Now, isn't this classically the kind of sorting out that district courts do? Or if a district court thinks that it requires further fact-finding from a hearing officer, that a hearing officer would do?
Well, I think at this point, it's really too late to send it back to due process. And the district court has had two evidentiary hearings. She had one in March before she issued the preliminary injunction. Okay, let's talk about anything new that you guys have to say. Parents presented testimony presented an affidavit and had the mother available for testimony. The district didn't present anything.
In March. That's March.
Oh, I'm sorry.
2022.
And then she had another hearing.
2 years ago.
In August of 2024. The needs that SM has, his educational needs, have not changed.
Right.
They're exactly the same as they were when the hearing officer issued his decision. It's just that we have a bigger, more complete, up-to-date record.
Okay. One of the arguments that's being made is that the district court, in effect, created a permanent injunction on a preliminary injunction record, that there's no end point to this, and that that is an abuse of discretion. Do you want to respond to that argument?
Well, yes, I will. First of all, it wasn't a permanent injunction.
I know it wasn't labeled as.
Right.
So answer the point that it's said to be, in effect, the same thing. Go with that.
Okay. So let's say that he was placed pursuant to the injunction, that there was a place and everybody said, okay, that's where he's going to go. The judge issues the order. At that point, the regular special ed process kicks in. So he would have that placement for a year. There would be an IEP meeting at sometime during the year to decide whether the placement was appropriate, whether it should continue, and so forth. And then there's a process for, you know, what would happen if one of the other parties believes that that's not the case. So there's never anything permanent in special ed. What we have here, and I just wanted to talk about what the hearing officer did, because the hearing officer was flat out wrong. By the way, the contracts were in the due process record. No one argued.
You like some of what the hearing officer did, right?
Pardon me?
You like some of what the hearing officer
did. It's a really weird case, yes.
Yeah. You like the fact that the hearing officer said this person, SM, needs a residential placement. You're not fighting that, are you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Your argument's simply that there's no imminence requirement in the
right.
In the IDEA.
Right, because what the hearing officer said was, well, yeah, no one really disputes the facts, and, you know, FAPE is forward-looking. You know, if I needed to make a decision about what he needs right now, he'd need a residential placement. But I'm not doing that because I have this 1306 thing, and which no one argued. The district never argued they weren't the LEA. And so they didn't have to give him an IEP at all, so I'm not going to adjudicate the issue before me, which is whether that IEP was FAPE, because it didn't have a residential, because the sole reason that I am rejecting the parent's claim is because I've decided under 1306 this is the resident district and they have no FAPE obligation whatsoever.
But there's an imminence requirement. Is this local education agreement that the district court was talking about, the local agency responsibility agreement, is that in effect? Has it remained in effect?
Well, the first time I ever heard that it hadn't been approved was today. So as far as I know,
it's news to you.
It's news to me, and it's a contractual obligation. Everybody has been operating under that assumption. Bucks County, Colonial School District, you know, Rose Tree Media, whoever it is, I think that's where Ellen is. None of those people are anywhere to be seen. This is the only school district there is in the case.
Okay.
So that's...
Where does the authority to ask a school district for a contingent IEP come from?
Okay. So, first of all, a contingent IEP is not a special ed term. The court in LT used the word contingent. It's an adjective. It's not a capital C.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea was, in that case, the child was getting ready to come back to the district.
It was imminent.
And there was no IEP. There was no placement waiting for him. And especially with a child who needs a residential, as you can see in this case, in 3 years, only three places have accepted him. It takes a hugely long time to find a placement like that. So the district said, well, we don't have to do anything until he's actually on the doorstep of his parents' house. And the court said, no. You always have to have FAPE available for a child. You can't just say, oh, well, we'll start when you get here. That's not how it works. And so he used the word contingent IEP. It's not specialized.
This is where I understand the imminency requirement, because until it's imminent, there's a ripeness issue. They don't actually always have to have a contingent IEP just waiting in a drawer somewhere, right? Well, it would be not ripe.
Someone has to ask for it, which is what happened there and what's happened here. And the whole idea of contingent, again, like I said, it's an adjective. It's not an actual term. But it's just, it basically triggers the district's responsibility to start making a plan. One of the cases of the...
SM's been in the RTF all this time that we're talking about, 2020, 2022, 2024, I understand. He's still in the RTF. What's the school district supposed to do? When he's going to get out? When is the IEP really going to matter?
Well,
he's still in the RTF.
I don't know
what it takes to get out of that RTF.
It matters. It's an IEP for a residential placement. It will go into effect immediately. It's a gigantic IEP. It will go into effect immediately once he's transferred to a residential placement.
All right. But for 4 years, he's been in the RTF.
Right, because there's no place else for him to go. That's the problem. And it's just like really very similar to the IH versus Cumberland Valley School District case, which the hearing officer cited, and we cited in our brief. Yeah. And in that case, that was not a 1306 case. The child was in a cyber charter school instead of his own school district because the district hadn't offered him an appropriate IEP. The whole idea was that as soon as you do, he's coming out of that charter school.
Why was SM put into the RTF in the first place rather than an REP?
Okay. Why? So he has very significant needs, and a lot of those needs are behaviorally interfere with his ability to learn anything, language, you know, communication, behavior skills. They impede his ability to learn and to function in everyday life. So when his needs aren't being met, and for instance, what happened when he went into foundations, after he came out of Melmark, there were no services. Parents, you know, were asking for help. And then
why does one go into an RTF?
So he had major events in the home.
Why?
Attacking his parents, the dog, you know, things like he was a danger to himself at that time.
Why 4 years later is SM still in the RTF?
Because the way that mental health funding, there's such an overlap. So there are lots of things that would be considered mental health, but under the state's rubric, it's very broad and it has a huge overlap with the things that would be considered educational needs for kids like SM. He has to learn to control his impulse, to be able to sit in a chair, to be able to speak, to be able to do all sorts of functional daily activities like toilet training.
But that's true of many of these kids. But some of them go into an REP. Others go into an RTF.
Right.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is a lot of his educational needs fall under both. So you could have them either way. He has to have those things in his IEP for purposes of FAPE. But if you're just looking at, you know, what all the list of all the things the state mental health system might pay for, so a lot of those things are on the list. However, RTF does not provide FAPE. They're not an educational agency. Mm-hmm. So he's basically trapped in a system failure here. So, and that's the problem. But to suggest that there's been no process, that nobody knows what he needs now 3.5 years later is simply false. It's just wrong. He needed a residential placement at the time the hearing officer decided the case. He needs it now.
Okay. What happens if we just remand the case to the district court? Do you end up in some sort of procedural hell, or what happens next?
Well,
what do you want to
asking
have?
If that's what we are right now.
What do you want to have happen?
Yeah. Well,
if we send it back to the district court, what is your?
Well, I think that what needs to happen is that the appeal from the preliminary injunction should be denied.
Right.
And then the judge would be free to continue what she's doing. But at some point,
wouldn't that begin with the district judge trying to get a handle on exactly how SM is doing right now and what SM's needs are today?
That's what she did on August 20th and 21st. She had a 2-day hearing.
And then why not issue an order?
Well, I agree. I think what has really been the problem here was the judge is really trying to forge a way for this case to be resolved peacefully. And so she used the words like mutually agreeable,
right?
Which has been a problem.
What I'm trying to get at is What do you want out of us? What you want out of us is to say we affirm the preliminary injunction stands. And then things that are already happening keep happening, and you think that's the right outcome.
Well, I mean, I would like them to happen sooner, and I would like for the judge to be more...
Yeah, we're not controlling
that. Yes, but I think in terms of what's in front of you, yes. And by the way, there's never an appeal of the motion to dissolve, and the judge decided it. So, you know...
We got you.
Okay, so...
All right, thanks.
Do you have any other questions for me?
Nope.
Okay,
thanks,
thank you.
Ms. Finley, I told you I'd give you a moment if you need it.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, I'm talking to your colleague across the aisle, Ms. McKinley. Thanks. Put a minute on the clock, would you? Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor. We filed a motion for remand. It was denied. Elwyn is not cheaper than Melmark. The residential educational placements are generally the same in cost. We've offered FAPE. We think that's where a school district's obligation under the IDE ends.
I'm puzzled then. If the costs are the same, and they want Melmar, and it's no more expensive for you to do that than it is to have the person in Elwyn, why are we here?
Because it's not appropriate for the student to meet his needs. The court appointed...
On what record do you have that? On what basis are you pressing that?
2 weeks ago, there was testimony from Melmark and
Take
Elwyn.
It to the district court.
And we have, Your Honor. We haven't received a ruling we understood that we would before today.
There was testimony that Melmark didn't want to admit him? That
Melmark was willing to admit him, but only through yesterday, and there was no ruling, which we didn't understand either.
All right, but assume let me follow up on, I think Judge Jordan made an important point. If you were willing to pay for the other side of Elwyn, outside of the RTF, and mom doesn't want that, and mom wants Melmark, and the cost is the same to Chichester, why does Chichester care? Why wouldn't Chichester, you know, do what the parent wants? That seems sort of obvious.
Because, Your Honor, we are bound to offer a free, appropriate public education that educators who spent their entire lives learning what that means thinks will meet this child's needs. It's not about what the parent wants.
But if the folks at, I mean, the folks at Melmark are professionals, right?
We do not believe it's appropriate. We're concerned about the number of restraints every year that Melmark has, where the student is not currently being restrained. We're concerned about the program. They were not able to articulate.
It's really not about the money. It's about control. It's about the school district believing Melmark is inappropriate for this child, even though his own mother thinks Melmark is appropriate for the child.
It's not about control. It's about the child and what we know to be the child's educational needs.
Who knows what's best for the child?
In terms of your
argument comes down to the school district knows best and the mom doesn't know.
Your Honor, the educators who have assessed his needs and whose job it is to assess and understand student needs believe that Elwyn is appropriate and Melmark is not.
Okay.
We have to offer faith.
All right, so now we're going to have a federal district judge make that decision. And that's the way this happens, right?
That's what we would hope.
A little bit, you know, somebody might look at this record and wonder if the school district is playing for time. But that'll have to be for a district judge, I guess, to make a decision on, because none of that's on the record in front of us. None of that's on the record in front of us. We've got everybody's arguments. We appreciate the briefing and the argument here today. We'll go ahead and take the matter under advisement and recess court.
Thank you.